Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. We're going to wrap up the week with maybe the primary reason that parents believe that meltdowns happen in their kids. All week long, we've been talking about emotional meltdowns in children. And we've talked about some things that sort of the typical developmental process for it, where it starts with temper tantrums. And then there's things that parents do that exacerbate those temper tantrums into what we're referring to as full-blown meltdowns.
Right.
And we talked about meltdowns associated with psychopathology, especially ADHD and anxiety. And then we really got to the complicated factor of emotional dysregulation, which can occur with any type of pathology, from depression to ADHD to anxiety, or this disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. It can happen for a number of reasons, but it is a beast of a different category.
Right. So many times, as we've done our podcasts, our writings and our podcasts and our blogs, we talk about these different conditions as being on a spectrum. And in fact, the people who develop DSM-5 talk, there's an ongoing discussion about whether we should try to differentiate different disorders and put them into discrete categories, or if everything is on a spectrum. For example, in DSM-4, the autism type of disorders were 5 discrete categories.
Right.
In DSM-5, they're on a single spectrum, from mild to severe.
Right.
And so it is with emotional meltdowns or temper tantrums. You have everything from garden variety, simple early childhood temper tantrums to some kind of neurobiological event that we call a rage attack or an emotional meltdown.
Right.
So in the course of this week, we've really discussed all 5 of those.
Right.
All 4. Everything from temper tantrums to what we think is a neurobiologically based emotional meltdown. There's some brain difference there that responds to powerful medications.
Right. Now, despite some of these different triggers, these different causes for these meltdowns, invariably parents come in complaining that their child has these meltdowns, and we'll talk about it from the perspective of intent. Parents oftentimes feel as though their child is having these temper tantrums or these meltdowns for the purpose of manipulating and controlling the parent or the situation. And the goal then is that from the parent's perspective, is that the child is doing this so that they can get their way.
That's right. And one of the dangers, I think that's the right word. One of the dangers, one of the things that we have to be very careful of, is that frequently people will say, well, he's not having these at school, or he's not having them here. He only has it here.
Right.
Or that's right. He does only have it here.
Okay? Right.
These events, particularly the most significant, the most intense, tend to occur at home, and they tend to occur in front of people who will, I'm going to say who will tolerate them. I don't mean put up with them. I mean that most children will have a tantrum in front of their mother because they know their mother isn't going to leave.
Right.
They know.
Right.
This has to be released.
Right.
Okay. They have to get rid of this, whatever feeling they're having.
Right.
But it's going to happen in front of people where there's no written. Now, it can happen anywhere if they're provoked.
Right.
If you provoke any of these kids enough, they'll have a meltdown anywhere.
Yeah.
But typically, they're reserved for home and they're reserved for mother because mother is unconditional.
Right.
Mother's not going anywhere.
Right. And part of that is because of fear. And when you talk to these kids, it's an impressive fear of the principal that they have, that they don't want to go to the principal. Now they
don't know what's going to happen.
No idea.
Right.
No idea what's going to happen. But there is an intense fear of the principal. Mm-hmm. It's impressive. The other piece to this is that, you know, I remember first seeing this when I was actually working with kids with Tourette's disorder.
Yeah.
And now I think that, or I would hope that maybe unlike emotional meltdowns, at least initially, most of you listening would agree that, okay, with something like Tourette's disorder, there is something going on with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
There is,
right.
That is right. Brain-based, basal ganglia.
Mm-hmm.
There's something going on in right. those regions of the brain causing this. Nobody has tics because they want to have tics.
That's right.
Okay?
There's no intent.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can, you know, hopefully you all agree with that. But I hope that it doesn't change your mind, or it won't change your mind, though the fact is many kids with Tourette's disorder don't take at school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If they do, sometimes it's very minor, mild tics.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen kids with moderate to severe Tourette's disorder who either do not have any tics for the 8 hours or so that they're at school,
right.
or only have very, very mild hidden tics,
right.
to where nobody knows that they even have Tourette's disorder.
And we've heard many kids, there are published programs on this where people with Tourette's, adults with Tourette's will say, mm-hmm. I can contain it.
Right.
But eventually it has to come out. I can contain it while I'm at work.
Right.
I can contain it while I'm at school. But eventually it has to be released.
And so because of that, I think it's important, and maybe because of that experience that I had, it's easier to understand and appreciate the fact that these kids with emotional meltdowns,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they may be able to control it, contain it. They exert a tremendous amount of energy throughout mm-hmm. the day to not express that at
That's
school.
Right.
But what that does is that empties the frontal lobe tank of inhibition so
right.
that when they get home, then it's more likely
That's
to
right.
happen.
Because they don't see these events at school.
Right.
After kindergarten or
right.
first grade, you don't see these anymore. You certainly don't see it after third grade.
Right.
There might be a few kids in first grade who are still having them. But the child knows that this is not something
mm-hmm.
that you
mm-hmm.
do at school.
Right.
It's going to be done.
Right.
It's just not going to be done here.
And if they do it at school, it's usually in the last month of the school year.
Right.
We've heard of kids who, in the last month or month and a half or so of the school year, the teacher starts to see some of these
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we've been there now, you know, almost 150 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're much more comfortable. We know right. that we're getting to the end of the school year, which increases the stress level. That's usually around testing time, which
right.
increases the stress level.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start, their ability to contain it begins to decrease.
Diminish, right, right.
It's not a diagnostic indicator of something else, of intent or manipulative behavior,
mm-hmm.
just because the kid can control it at school.
Right.
That doesn't take us out of the realm of any of this pathology that we've talked about over the course
mm-hmm.
of the week.
Or he doesn't always react this way.
Right.
That doesn't matter.
Right.
That has nothing mm-hmm. to do with this issue.
Right.
So, but there are kids, and I think in the previous 4 days, we've talked about conditions where the child, it's involuntary, we call it involuntary
mm-hmm.
deviance. The child is having these things because of poor impulse control
mm-hmm.
or underlying brain irritability or anxiety
right.
or there's something producing it. And so in all of those cases, I don't think parents need to be concerned about a child doing it
right.
voluntarily or to control the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think there are most circumstances, these are not done for control purposes.
Right. And when you talk to a parent who's really been working through this, they can differentiate the two. They
mm-hmm.
can tell, oh, that is just her when she's upset that she's not getting her way.
Right.
That's a meltdown.
Right.
And they
right.
can differentiate those two things.
That's right.
And when your child is going through that and you start to really examine what's going on, you can see that.
Right.
And then you can respond to them accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the bottom line that we really want to kind of convey today is that when we're talking about these real meltdowns,
mm-hmm.
again, not just temper tantrums, because temper tantrums oftentimes are to get their way.
Or to get attention.
Right.
Or to, you know,
for a purpose.
So, right.
When we're talking about real meltdowns, that's not what's happening.
Mm-mm.
This isn't a bid for control. This isn't an attempt to take over the home or to take over a particular situation. That could be a consequence if parents or yeah. teachers or whomever allow it to happen. But the goal, there is no goal of manipulation or control in those situations.
Just think of the language we use.
Mm-hmm.
When we say a loss of control, we mean a loss of control.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a loss of control and be
purposeful,
manipulating and controlling at the same time.
Right.
It's either a loss of control, where there is no intent
right.
to control, or it's manipulation. And
right.
I think most parents, even with a child who tends to have meltdowns, most parents can differentiate the two.
Right. And the same thing with impulsivity, and this blows my mind sometimes. When we talk about impulsivity, the definition of impulsivity
mm-hmm.
is acting without considering the consequences.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
Acting before you think through
right.
all of the consequences.
And so what do we say about kids who are impulsive? Well, if you would just stop and think, that would be great. But if he could stop and think, then he wouldn't be impulsive. And
that's
he
right.
wouldn't. We wouldn't be here talking about it. So it's this... This catch 22 that we get caught in, that we, our treatment or our reaction is to do exactly the thing that we know that they can't do.
That's right. We frequently say to children or about children, well, if you would just consider the consequences. Well, if you have an impulse control problem,
right.
you don't consider consequences. So the intervention can't be the cause.
Right.
I mean, you can't say, well, if you did, yeah, if you...
Yeah, and it's the same thing with anxiety.
You don't
well, you
have...
You know what? If you would just take a couple of deep breaths and realize
right.
that there's nothing to be afraid of, their brain is afraid before they know they're afraid.
Right. If they could do that, they wouldn't be having...
Right. Because nobody wants to have those feelings. Nobody wants to experience that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So... They're when we're talking again about these authentic, true meltdowns,
mm-hmm.
we're not talking about the purpose of control. It could start that way, absolutely. It could have began with, you know, I'm going to have a temper tantrum because, you know...
But that's early.
That's early on.
Right.
Once it crosses that threshold to a meltdown,
mm-hmm.
that's not the purpose.
That's not right.
Now,
right.
we have to deal with that initial... intent for control. We will have to deal with that, but that is a different beast than the emotional meltdown.
Mm-hmm,
that's a very different thing.
Yeah, you know, we've even had some kids will come in and say, well, their parents will come in and say, well, he'll stand in the middle of the room and say, well, if I don't get this, I'm feeling a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to have a meltdown.
Right.
Okay, that's clearly
right.
That's clearly control. That's a threat. You know, so
mm-hmm.
that's threat of control.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. I remember a little girl that I saw one time. Was she 8, I think?
Oh, yeah.
And she...
She was in third grade.
She was... They couldn't figure it out because she would get so upset and she would throw up in the morning and then she couldn't go to school and all this kind of stuff. And so I remember meeting with her and I was like, tell me, man, when you throw up, you don't have to go to school then, right? Yep.
She knew
exactly what she was doing,
mm-hmm.
but hers was not getting to a meltdown. It was just, you could, even in the description from the parents, you could feel that it was a very different type
mm-hmm.
of scenario.
That's right.
She was getting upset, yes, but she was also in control of that upset. And that's different than
mm-hmm.
kids who are having real meltdowns.
Yeah, and I think what parents and teachers, caretakers need to do is once you sense that there is a loss of control,
mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty clear that we're not dealing with
mm-hmm.
an effort to control.
Right.
I think that control becomes the operative word.
Yeah. We used to say that you know, you can differentiate because if the kid is having the temper tantrum in front of you or having the meltdown in front of you, if you leave the room, mm-hmm. the temper tantrum will follow you and the meltdown won't. Mm-hmm. I think I've adjusted my perspective of mm-hmm. that a little bit because even the meltdown will follow you mm-hmm. sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The difference is that the temper tantrum doesn't start without you present. Mm-hmm. The meltdown can start whether you're present or not.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. so that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. The meltdown is like the boy that we saw. It started there, but he left the environment. Mm-hmm. He ventured
that's
out.
Right.
He went out of the room. Mm-hmm. He went, we talked about this in yesterday's podcast. He went out into the parking lot and started pulling up shrubs. Mm-hmm. There was no audience. There was no intent for him to say, you know, look how upset I am. Mm-hmm. You've made me this upset. Get me this Pokemon game.
Right.
He said he was escaping and he was raging and it didn't matter
that's right.
who was watching. That mm-hmm. was not a temper tantrum.
Right. It was unleashed.
Right.
I don't want to say the monster. That's too pejorative. But it was unleashed mm-hmm. and it had to play itself out till he was exhausted.
Right. 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 Mm-hmm. And so it's very different. Because I know that when I've talked about that kid before, there have been people that I've talked that have been either in the audience or that I've been talking with about it who will say, well, you know, if you were just, you know, setting limits or if you were just doing mm-hmm. this or doing that, that would have... No. These parents knew what they were doing.
They knew that there was nothing they could do.
And at that point, they knew what they were doing. They had done some things before that created some issues.
Right.
But by that point, they knew what they were doing. And this kid just was, he would just get out there. I mean, it was just, right. once it set off, it was going.
Right.
So, but again, the point of, I guess, the take-home message for today is that we have to avoid that initial impulse that this is for control,
right.
that this is to manipulate, mm-hmm. because then it becomes how are we going to discipline that out of him,
that's right.
as opposed to how are we going to help him process this information to prevent them from happening.
You're exactly right. It once, and I've said this many times in my presentations, that once you assume that they're losing control for some reason. Mm-hmm. And the assumption is that it's voluntary.
Right.
Then the intervention is punishment.
Right.
Then you have to pay some price for
right.
this, and you don't want to do that because
right.
what happens is when the event is over, if you then dole out a punishment,
right.
you're going to risk reigniting the child.
Mm-hmm.
This is not under conscious control,
right.
and so you don't want to punish.
Right.
For something that's not under conscious control.
Right.
Okay? And you always risk reigniting the child.
Right.
This is a teaching moment.
Right.
What I compare it to is if a child had a seizure.
Right.
You don't punish... We don't anymore. We used to.
Yeah.
We used to. You don't punish a child for having a seizure.
Right.
You don't punish a child for having a migraine.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't punish a child for having a meltdown.
Right.
So
it
move
doesn't,
away from that whole model.
And even that doesn't mean that there's not a loosely termed consequence. If you destroy the room, once the meltdown is over, you know what? Our job now is to clean up the room.
Mm-hmm.
We clean up the mess that we made.
Right.
It's not a okay. Now that you've decided to be done with that, mm-hmm. now you need to get in there and clean up this mess
now
that you've done.
And I'll help you. You know, it's okay. You know,
yeah.
You're not going to push the child into.
Right.
You know, provoke the child
right.
into cleaning the room and create another meltdown.
Right.
Okay. No, that's not. So there is a consequence.
Right.
But the consequence should teach something. It should
yeah.
teach them how to avoid this the next time or mm-hmm. clean up the mess this time.
Right.
There should be somebody. Yes, there's a consequence.
Right.
It doesn't have to be response cost
yeah.
or time.
Remember the boy that we worked with at that school and, you know, they called us to the office. We were
up yeah.
at the school together,
yeah.
and they called us to the office because this kid's having a meltdown. And he was in a pretty good meltdown,
yes.
flipping tables over in the principal's office. He was one that did not care. He was not scared of the principal. He's
right.
flipping tables over, even like looking like he's trying to impale himself on
right.
the leg of the table. It was mm-hmm. again not in a sick way, but it was an
impressive
feat. We just kind of watched and made sure that he was he was safe. And yeah. and then as he came down, we said, "All right, buddy, you may help you. You may help you clean this up." And that he settled. He helped us flip the table back over. Helped us put the books back on the shelves and everything. Right. And everything was fine.
And it was over.
Until the police came, and then we then because the school, of course, called the police. That was
don't criminalize this behavior.
Yeah, we didn't know
it's not necessary. I was reading a study yesterday that if there is a school resource officer in the building, it's 5 times more likely that a behavior will become criminal than if they're not there. These needn't be criminalized,
right? Right.
These are mental health issues, not criminal issues.
Yeah. So, all
okay.
Right. I think that's it.
That's it.
All right. Love to hear from you. Probably should have said that after at the end of every podcast this week. But it's tough to keep up with things that we should say after each podcast. So, but anyways, we'd love to hear your thoughts and your experiences. So please write to us. But until next time. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.